Hi, I'm Ali Hassan, host of CBC's Laugh Out Loud. Do you like to laugh? Because we're serving up big laughs each week. We feature comedians from across Canada. You might already be fans of some of them, and others might be new discoveries. We record emerging comedians and established pros in front of live audiences all across the country, and we promise that you'll be literally laughing out loud. You can find Laugh Out Loud on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Peter Soan just made the new Pixar movie that everyone's talking about. It's called Elemental, and it's largely the story of his own parents coming to America and making a home as Korean immigrants. But Peter talks about taking something like fire, which evolutionarily we are programmed to be afraid of, and the challenge of making us not afraid of it, actually in love with fire, relating to fire. Peter will be here to talk about how he did it. I'm Tom Power. You're listening to Q. So when most of us look at the periodic table of the elements, I've never started a show like that before, by the way. When most of us look at the periodic table of the elements, it's a bunch of indecipherable symbols that we've got to memorize. That was not the case for Peter Soan. Growing up, Peter was always an artistic kid, and when he saw the periodic table, he saw an apartment building full of different apartments where the different elements were all neighbors. Now, 30 years later, Peter has made that vision into Pixar's latest movie. It's called Elemental. It's set in Element City, which is populated by four different sort of cultural types of people: water, fire, air, and earth. This is just what it sounds like.
Meet the residents of Element City. Air usually has their head in the clouds. Earth can be a little seedy.
Nothing weird going on here.
Water is always getting into something. Help! And fire? As ordered, we run a little hot.
I like the idea of being a little seedy. Not only is Elemental based on Peter Soan's view of the periodic table, it's also based on his life growing up in the Bronx as a first-generation Korean-American. This movie is an immigration story, but it's also a love story, and it's a story about how different cultures can not only mix but make each other better. It's also eye-poppingly amazing to look at. I was so excited to talk to Peter Soan, the guy behind the new Pixar film Elemental. Here's our conversation. How are you?
I'm really good. Thank you for asking, Tom. Thanks for having me here.
Are you kidding me? It's lovely to have you.
Yeah.
You went to the Kim's Convenience.
Yeah.
The real Kim's Convenience store. You're only in Toronto for like 2 days and you went to like a pilgrimage. Why did you do that? You're a fan of the show.
I am a fan of the show. I found it on Netflix. I didn't realize that it had been in Canada way before it on Netflix. But I fell in love with the performers, the actors. It connected to my life because like I grew up in a grocery store and then it wasn't a convenience store like that, but all the sort of situation that were going on felt very real. My brother now is taking over my father's shop. It's not a convenience store, but I told my brother like, oh, you've got to see this. It's so much about like us growing up. And then he's just like, why would I want to see it? I live it.
And I'm like, why would I want to see a dramatized version?
But I love the show.
Hold on, what was the store like? I've never actually been to the real store.
Oh, yeah. Meaning like the imprint of it feels very much like the show, but it's not the show. And there's some photos of some of the performers in it. But I wanted to like buy something in there. I walked in. I'm like, oh, this place is so cool. You know, there was a lot of weed outside, just to say. There was like a lot of cannabis going on. But then once I got in, I bought like a coffee crisp and got a little change. And I felt so happy to buy something from the shop. But I got my little selfie with the shop and my little pilgrimage. But it was the first thing that like once I had time, I was like, I'm going to the Kim's Convenience. Yeah.
You can't get coffee crisp in the U.S.
You can find it.
Oh.
Yes, there are places that you can find
They're
it for
good,
sure.
They're good, though. They're one of the
things. Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. It was like $2 and felt good.
I'm going to get one after this. Thanks for bringing up that thing about your family. Let's talk a little bit about that right now.
Because
the film Elemental is really, really personal for you. You can see it from the very first scene. It's a beautiful film, by the way.
Thank you so much. That means a great deal.
I got to see, like, in the first 30 seconds, I was so hooked in it. Because very quickly you realize what's going on.
Yeah.
The mother and father, these kind of young couple who are pregnant, you know, come, they're fire, and they come to this land that's primarily water and wind and earth, primarily water.
Yeah.
And they have to sort of like make a life there, and they start their own store called, what's it called, the fireplace. Yeah, the fireplace. And I realize that this mirrors your own, your parents' own experience. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah. Look, when I was growing up, this was in the Bronx in New York, and there were a lot of immigrant families around us. And as a kid, I didn't really understand socially what was going on. But it took me, through high school and getting into college to realize, like, holy cow, what that place was, what that upbringing was. And of growing up in a shop where you're like, selling strawberries for four for a dollar, or like watching out for shoplifters, like that world. Yeah.
Tell me about them. So your parents came over from Korea and started
a
fruit and vegetable store.
That's right. And so my father, they came separately. They weren't married. They got married here in the States. But my father came in the late 60s to New York. He started with like $150 and $75 to a rental. He would always, it was like this prostitute's apartment that he would just say, hooker house. I'm like, wow, okay. And the other $75 went to a pretzel hot dog cart that he rented from from someplace. And from there, he was saving money until he could get a grocery store. And by the time he saved enough money to get a grocery store, he had met my mom.
Wow.
And then they got married, and 5 weeks later, they got married, and then 9 months later, I was born. I'm a honeymoon baby.
That's a good name for your memoir, by the way.
Chapter 12. Yeah. I grew up in this store till I was about 8 or 9, and
selling fruit, selling vegetables,
selling store, playing, G.I. Joes on Campbell soup cans, and that world of, changing my brother's diaper on like cabbage boxes and things like that. I don't know if I'm romanticizing it now. Just talking to you, Tom, I'm like, I'm not romanticized, but. But that was the life. That was the life for sure.
Were you drawing?
We drew in the back. There was a back room there that, our mom had set up these pallets, and that we'd put like cardboard as like a rug, and we would just hang out there, and you'd just draw on the cardboard or anything like that.
What did you draw? Like, what was the first thing you drew?
Oh my gosh. I don't remember. Snoopy maybe, or like one of these things. Because my mom, you're too young for this, but like Oshkosh Bagosh.
Yeah, of course I remember. I'm born in 87. I remember Oshkosh.
Okay, right on,
and I had older siblings, and I got their
hand-me-downs. Hand-me-down Oshes. That's legit.
That's my memoir.
Hand-me-down Oshes. Chapter 12. Yeah. She sewed Snoopy stuff into our Oshkosh Bagoshes. And so I remembered trying to draw that from the outfit.
How was – it's a different thing you did, become drawing for a living making art for a living versus, I guess, the mentality that it would be to save enough money from a pretzel cart to start how was your family with you wanting to go into drawing and all that?
I mean, it was pretty cliche, sort of like 90s Asian family of just like, no, that's not going to happen. I mean, they didn't know the value in the arts. They grew up poor in Korea, and then my mother wanted to draw, but they told her like, you can't do that. You're a woman, or I don't know why they stopped her from drawing. Most of like elementary school, it was okay to draw. But once I got into middle school and, my mom was finding drawings in the textbooks and everything, it became sort of a wall in that cliche sort of thing that you always hear. And that was real.
I understand then. Thanks for telling me that.
Yeah.
Did you know? Now I'm understanding the film even more personal to you.
Yeah, right on.
Did you know that this film was going to be so personal to you, like when you came up with the idea for it?
No.
Like it was going to so closely mirror your parents' journey?
No, I mean, it's...
And your own journey, right? Because this is also sort of about your relationship with your wife. Can you talk about that?
Yes. And so there are two pieces that come from a personal place. This is not an autobiography.
Yes,
obviously.
It is.
Yeah, no. But when I had an experience in New York, like I had made a movie and I went onto a radio show down in L.A., and I had told them that, like, I was born in the Bronx and blah, blah, blah. And literally the next day or next week, the city of the Bronx called and say, we heard that you're from here. We'd like to celebrate the arts and we'd like you to come and celebrate it. And I went over to this thing. I brought my parents. You know, they had never been to anything. Like, I hadn't been to anything like this. We were all dressed up in our church outfits and everything. I had a speech about, like, Pixar or whatever. And they showed all this footage from Pixar movies. I'm like, I didn't work on any of those. Oh, my gosh. But I got up on stage, and I looked at the crowd, and it was just, like, a diverse group of people, like West Indians, Jamaicans, and these four Asian faces at the bottom of my parent, my mother, my father, his brother, and his my brother and his wife, yeah. And my mom had like the crazy mascara, railroad tracks, you know, and my dad was holding in tears. Once I saw that, I got very emotional, and I don't remember everything that I said, but I definitely remember thanking them and going like, if it wasn't for the hard work my parents gave for us, you know, my brother and I would not have a life. And there was someone in the background going like, you know, like, you better thank them. And it was just like, yeah. And but I don't remember everything. But I just remember that the act of being grateful, yeah. And being very emotional. And I came back to Pixar and I told the story to some friends and they were just like, that's the film. That's the next thing you got to do. And so that was the first thing. Now, look, it was just the gesture. I didn't think it was going to be like so many pieces of, you know, what I experienced and some of the coworkers experienced they put in there. But that was part of the game.
Well, let's talk about that. But just to reiterate that, like one of the central sort of tensions or love stories in the film is between Fire.
Yes.
Ember.
Yes.
Who is a fire thing.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Fire woman.
Yeah.
And Wade, who is a water man.
Yeah.
I'm Wade.
I'm Ember.
And their sort of forbidden love between them, which at least in, not autobiographical, but in some way mirrors your own. Can you talk about that?
Yes, absolutely. When I was drawing, looking for, you know, like it's just free doodling. And then like this fire character came and then I drew the fire character over like water. And I was like, oh, that seems dangerous. And then I drew a water character and there was a tension between them that triggered, you know, a personal connection of I married someone that wasn't Korean, but I grew up with a family that was just like, you got to marry Korean.
Your grandmother said that to you on her deathbed, is that
Yes,
right?
My grandmother was just like, Hanguk yeoja, Hanguk yeoranhae. You know, and it's like this, you know, marry Korean. And it created a lot of culture clash stuff. At the time, it wasn't funny, but like looking back on it now, it was crazy. And I was trying to pull a lot from that and from our crew that had similar experiences.
So you've never left Firetown?
Sorry, buddy. Elements don't mix.
Whoa! Hey!
Plus, my dad would boil you alive.
Why does anyone get to tell you what you can do in your life? Come on!
My understanding of it is that you had like, maybe 100?
Yeah.
Folks who work at Pixar who are first or second generation immigrants.
Yeah.
And, or come from families.
Yes,
And you ask them their stories too.
Yeah. Denise Rehm, our producer, and I just set up like, you know, 4 or 5 person interviews essentially and asking people about their stories. And, you know, it was moving. And these people that you work with, and there were some funny ones, and there were stories about love and loss and sacrifices. And across the board, there were so many of these amazing stories, and you just wanted to honor all of it. And so a lot of the game early on was just trying to find ways to, you know, bring some of these elements into the story, you know. And there's this young woman named Charu, who's a lighter at Pixar, who told us a story. She is Indian, and she was in love with a German guy. And, you know, she told us the story of having to go to an astrologist in India. And we're like, whoa, we were living in Texas at the time, but we had to go all the way to India to see if we were a match or not. I'm like, right. Yeah, matchmaking. And, you know, she told us this amazing emotional story about how they were such a good match and that it sort of like transcended culture and that love won out. And, you know, that was an inspiration for Ember's mother, for Cinder, to be the spiritual matchmaker and to smell other fire characters' smoke and go, ooh, I smell a little love in that smoke, and trying to have that fun. But completely inspired by the stories that we had heard.
I'm Tom Power. You're listening to my conversation with the animator Peter Sohn. In his 20-plus years at Pixar, he's worked his way up from being a sketch artist on Finding Nemo to now making his own film called Elemental. Here's more of our conversation. It strikes me that you were making this film at the same time that, I mean, this took 7 years to make this
film? 7 years,
A lot of that time would have been time that immigration would have been in the news, whether it be through the President Trump's travel ban or just, you know, conversations about immigration on the Mexico border in Canada.
Yes, that's right.
What was that?
Well, it was interesting because, you know, it didn't start like with any of that in the news. I mean, it's always, I guess it's sort of in the news, but like I had come from this such sincere place of like thanking my parents, you know, that's how this started. But then as some of that, you know, talk got more heated, my father passed away in the middle of that.
Oh my God, I'm
and
so sorry.
So, yeah, and so that was early development. Like I had asked my dad all these questions about why you came here. What was it like? You know, like how was it like racist? And like how what happened? And then, you know, a year into the development of this thing, he passed away. And as everything was getting heated, I was like trying to figure out how to cope with it. And so the movie, like, as you're making it, like, you know, like there's just some conscious, subconscious stuff that just gets into the work that you're doing that you don't even realize.
Yeah.
And it's like took a dark turn. I mean, it's not connected really to the politics at that time, but I just remember like all of that was sort of energizing the loss more.
It was gonna,
my father was an immigrant, you know.
You were dealing with the loss of your father at the time, this film that you had sort of made to thank him and your mother. Yeah. At the same time, there's like rhetoric. There's like a feeling in the air around the anti-immigration stuff.
Yes, yes.
And so that it enters the tone of the film in some way or another.
Yeah, and most of the time, like it was a dark version of the film. And it got so dark that like, you know, like I remember talking to my executive producer, Pete Docter, about it. And he goes, Pete, I'm so sorry. Like, he was so supportive of what I was going through. And he was just like, you know, is this the film that you want to make? And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
I never wanted to do anything that was this dark. I just wanted to make a hopeful thing about love, essentially. And so it was just trying to get rid of all that darkness for some part of the process. Meaning it wasn't about like, oh, trying to make some message thing. It was just like coming like back to this sincere nugget of what, you know, what the film could be, you know.
And it is. It's such a beautiful, hopeful film
that talks about,
like, the idea of love, you know, and the, and the power of love.
Yeah.
Can I ask you, like, an animation question?
Sure,
about?
Yeah, of course.
I don't know much about animation.
Yeah, right on.
But here's my thought.
Okay.
This might seem simple.
You have a smile. You have a wry smile. Okay.
Okay, right. Thank you for translating for the radio, by the way.
Okay,
spectacular stuff. I feel like... Okay, I'm just going to say it. I feel like humans, evolutionarily, like in terms of our evolution, are programmed, if not anything else, to be afraid of fire. Talk to me about making fire, I want to say warm, but like making fire. I loved seeing characters who were built out of fire. I feel like that goes against all of my intuition. Do you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. Yeah. Yeah. What you're sort of feeling was a lot of fear for when we were starting this thing, because there were no characters when we started. I just had these crappy drawings. That was it. And so when you told people like fire characters, you start to visualize what that is. And yeah, fire is intimidating and dangerous and can burn things down to the ground. And they're really busy and chaotic looking. And like, how could you ever even look at something like that for that long? And immediately, some of the first tests that we had done were that. It was like a Balrog coming out of Mora, you know. you know, it's just like terrifying, you know. And you're like, we put eyes on this thing. And you're like, whoa.
We got a problem.
Yeah, yeah. You can't connect to this thing. And so it was really, you know, working with these tremendous artists. Like, Tom, you should come to Pixar. This group of people that just like, that's too scary. Here, let me try making that more appealing. And it was just this evolution of people giving their talented gifts to trying to find like, oh, what about slowing the fire this far down? Like, okay, it looks more ghostly and plasma. Let's turn it up a little bit more. And then like, and you know, like this great artist took iPhone footage. Like he photographed his backyard campfire and then he slowed it down and just pulled frames out and he just started painting over these frames. And that was essentially the first version of Ember where you're like, holy cow, she looks appealing. She looks like an older, like 20 something, because even finding gender and like age within these elements was very difficult, because like you start out like a campfire, like is that a grandpa or is that a baby? Like you couldn't tell when they got so abstract. So you just had to kind of keep forming, and this whole game of like, is it the human torch? Is this like a human on fire, or is it something that's just fire? And you know, and so they were doing all these tests to make them not scary, but then, you know, another test that they had done was they flew a paper plane through her face. And so it just went like a gas and there was no skull. And you're like, holy cow. Okay. we're getting somewhere. And it was just this long evolution. The film took this long because we hadn't done anything like that before at Pixar. You usually have a toy that once you model it, you're good to go. You have a car.
Yeah, Buzz Lightyear, here it is.
Yeah, here it is. You move it and then get, I mean, it's more than that, but these characters didn't really have skin in that way. And we thought fire was going to be hard. Water was even more difficult. It was nuts. It was so crazy.
Yeah, water, because there's no structure to it at all.
No structure.
Wind? Did you characters out of wind? Yeah, is insane.
Yeah. It was really challenging. But again, all I see now is just the tremendous work that this crew did in terms of doing something that a lot of people didn't think was possible.
How has the technological capability changed from when you, because you started Finding Nemo.
That's right.
That was your first film with Pixar. And you were doing sketches for Finding Nemo.
That's right, yeah.
So 2000
yes.
to 2023. Yeah. How has the capability of Pixar changed since then?
It's changed a great deal in terms of its rendering power, how it creates an image. And on the first Toy Story, you had 500 computers or 900 computers or something like that. And then now we've got 150,000 computers. And the rendering power got more crazy. You know, Moore's Law, the more technology is just going to continue to multiply. But the crafting of it remains the same, meaning it's still having to sculpt and build everything virtually, meaning everything that you see in the frame had to be built and painted, just like a Hollywood set, but virtually. And so there's still that amazing work that needs to get done. Who knows what the future of AI? AI is here.
Well, that
it's
was
crazy.
That was the next question I had for you, because I have a friend of mine who's a graphic designer.
Yeah.
She does some pretty, big deal work.
Yeah.
And I asked her a little while ago, how is AI going to change your life?
Yeah.
And she said, well, as someone who makes stills, I'm kind of out already.
Yeah.
I feel like I might be done.
Wow.
And I feel like as an animator, I got 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, wow.
So when you're talking 150,000 computers.
Yes.
AI, is that going to change your work or technology?
I assume that it will. I mean, we're all talking about it, all my friends at Pixar, we're all talking about how could we use the tools or, what's the danger of it? What's going to happen to, positions, but it's hopeful, meaning it's still such a creative business, in terms of trying to come up with these ideas, talking about our parents and all that stuff, that's still in there, And, but at the same time, it's here to stay. I mean, there is some machine learning going on with Ember, her flames have already a little bit of this sort of sidestep, but a sister to AI, but it's still there to help generate graphic flames. It's in there, and there's just going to be more of it coming down the road. And
it's your interesting difference from when you were just sketching on Finding Nemo. Eh?
Yeah,
which
that's
seemed
right.
like the future. I remember when that thing came out.
Yeah,
the
yeah.
way you guys animated water.
Yeah.
It seemed impossible
that
thing was even made.
I felt the same way. Even working on the movie, I couldn't believe. You're just doing drawings of fish and I'll put a bubble. That's water. But all of a sudden, out of nowhere, you start seeing this footage. The whole game in computer animation, you just feel like you're throwing ideas in a black hole.
Yeah.
Black hole. Is this doing anything? Nope. It's just going in a black hole. And all of a sudden, this image is birthed out of this hole, and it's spellbinding, and it's still this wonderful magic trick that happens on every film.
I mean, Pixar happened in a weird way too. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, when Toy Story came out.
Yeah, yeah.
But I remember it being so exciting. But I also remember being sort of talked about. There were bigger films.
Right.
And then there was there was mainstream cinema.
Yeah.
And then there was there's Toy Story, kids film, big deal.
Yeah.
And then Finding Nemo, it's a little bit more mainstream. It got a lot more attention.
Yeah.
But I mean, Pixar movies are pretty much the biggest movies in the world right now. It's Pixar versus Marvel all the time.
Right on.
For what is the biggest mainstream. What's that been like for you to see sort of over the time you've been there?
Well, I don't know if I ever see it like that. The intent of trying to make something as best as you can is so real there. And and it's not easy. And it's had its successes and it's had its tougher, non-successes. And but the intent has always been the same ever since I've been there. I've been there for a long time, where you're trying to create characters in a world that, feel truthful or feel authentic, but in an entertaining way, And it's how it always starts. And then, you're always getting, these films, this one took longer. Up and Coco also took 7 years, but most of the average film there is 4 to 5 years. And, you're working hard for those 4 to 5 years, They're not easy.
It's part one of my conversation with the filmmaker Peter Sohn, whose own life story is the inspiration for Pixar's big new summer movie. Imagine what that's like. to have the story of your family become the story that every family is going to watch this summer. The movie's called Elemental. I don't have any children, and I really loved it. Lest you think this is like a kid's movie or something like that. It's beautiful. And I went in a little bit hardened. I went in a little bit, I don't know if I was hurt, but I went in a little like, okay, here we go. And in the first like 3 minutes, I was just blown away and sad and moved. Pixar has a way of doing that. They did that with Up, remember? They have a way of doing that. Stick around. After the break, we're going to talk to Peter about some of the characters he's voiced over the years. This is a reluctant voice actor in some of the biggest animated movies of all time. We'll be right back.
Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements? I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tom Power. You're listening to Q. You're in the middle of my conversation with Peter Sohn, who is behind the new big Pixar summer movie called Elemental, which is simultaneously a movie about earth, water, air, and fire all living together in one city. So that's one part of it. And it's also kind of the story of Peter's own parents who immigrated from South Korea to the United States and created a life there that Peter has come from. And up till now, we've been talking a little bit about Peter's journey from starting out working on movies like Finding Nemo to now, you know, being behind the most anticipated Pixar movie of the year. But here's the thing about Peter. He can kind of do anything when it comes to animated film at Pixar, and he's incredibly proud of his work. But there's one thing he definitely can do, and he's quite good at. It's just maybe not the thing that he loves to talk about. Here's more of my conversation with Peter Sohn.
I got into storyboarding there, and the job of storyboarding at that time was just like pitching. So you're getting up, you've done a bunch of drawings on these little index cards, and then you're just pitching like, oh yeah, and then, you know, Nemo does this and that, and then the dentist does this. I'm sorry, I don't know why that's the dentist's voice. But
you're a voice actor, I'm not going to argue with you. But solid dentist voice.
Yeah, I'm going to fix your teeth. Root canal. Yeah. No, but like you're performing in there, and then I remember on Incredibles, Brad Bird saying like, we need a mugger. You look like a mugger, come on in. No, but I remember doing a scratch thing there. And what I mean by scratch is you're just doing temporary voices. When you're trying to make the movies, obviously these take too long. You're not hiring performers right away.
Yeah.
You're just testing out characters and testing out scenes. And so
what did you do?
It was the mugger in the first Incredibles where a young Mrs. Incredibles is on the rooftops dealing with this mugger. And she catches this criminal, and Bob Parr comes by and is just like, they have a little like sort of a banter.
Sure, you took him out. His attention was on me.
A fact I exploited to do my job.
My job, you mean?
A simple thank you will suffice.
Thanks, but I don't need any help.
The mugger jumps in and like, look, the lady got me first.
Whatever happened to equal treatment?
Hey, look, wait, the lady got me first.
And then Mrs. Parr punches him, and so I had to do this, oh! That was it. That was the first sort of thing that Brad kept me in the movie. And then from there, it's doing scratch and then the luckiness of saying like, hey, we really like you as the voice.
We're going to keep it.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know Chris Williams?
Yeah.
Chris Williams, animator.
Yeah, he just did Sea Beast. Yeah, he's amazing.
Kitchener Waterloo. Worked at Pixar too?
No, he Disney primarily.
Yeah. But he's from Kitchener Waterloo.
Oh yeah, right on.
In Ontario,
right
Canada.
On.
And he told me a similar story. I think he's...
Yeah. Yeah.
He's in Frozen.
Yeah, that's right.
And it was the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like he did the scratch vocal.
So
now you keep on getting voice acting gigs.
Yeah, it's just luck of the draw, honestly, you know. Most of the voices I've done are just variations of this. Like I'm not like changing my voice very much. It's just like, you know, like, hey, Remy.
Help, Remy, help.
DLC.
start swinging the light, trying to grab you.
Squishy would be like, "Hey, Mike." It's like it's the same thing, you know.
My name's Scott Squibbles. My friends call me Squishy. I'm undeclared, unattached, and unwelcome pretty much everywhere but here.
And so when you say acting, I always chuckle at it. Like, I don't know if that's exactly what I'm doing. But I have learned to try to get more vulnerable with the performance. You know, when you're doing the scratch performances, you're working with different directors. And how they try to get a performance out of you, it's very different from each director that you're working with. And so you learn a little bit of like, oh, what was useful and what was not. And so, when you're in a booth with a performer, you know, you're just trying to find a safe space to get vulnerable or to, you know, to find some of the humor. And so it's those sort of things that you vibe with that you try to create.
How do I say this now? I think any time – so as much as you want to talk about this, you lost both your parents while working on this film ostensibly, which is like a love letter to your parents.
Yes.
I'm so sorry, by the way.
Oh, yeah. No problem. Thank you. I mean, I really appreciate that. Yeah.
That's I can't imagine how tough that is. I think that whenever I've lost a parent, and I think any time that you experience that kind of loss, it makes you sort of like reconsider the things that your family may have done for you, you know, or the things you maybe have taken for granted.
Yes, exactly.
I can't imagine dealing with that loss, doing that anyway, and while also making a film about your parents' life.
Yeah.
What was illuminating? What was illuminating to you that maybe you didn't realize about your family story?
Boy, that's a really good question, Tom. It's interesting of what came out of the woodworks isn't the right word. Like when my dad passed away, like all of the siblings and the other family members started telling all these stories about him that I had never heard, you know, and when we were making the film, you know, that early on, you're just forming seeds and trying to get something going. And you know, I already had this idea of like, oh, I just want to thank them for all the work they had done. And all of a sudden, you know, there were different perspectives, different point of views on my father that were really new that I hadn't heard. And one of them was the idea of him coming to a new country and seeing a blank canvas in a store. Like, I never put that together, but my dad's brother, my uncle, was talking about it in this way, where it's like he could see an empty shop and have a vision for what that is. And it's very much like you in drawing. And it's like, oh my gosh, I never thought about it that way in terms of in my dad's weird way of his creativity was building the store. He knew where to put the meat, the vegetables, and all of that. And you know, there were things like that that I found very moving because you're just connecting things.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's bullshit. I don't know. I have no idea.
But what strikes me is that all of that leads to you having the life that you have now.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I wouldn't be able to do any of this if it wasn't for what they had given. And you know, as the movie went on, you know, I think I closed myself off from it. I'm not sure. Like, it wasn't like I was sad, but I was still like, gotta keep working, you know. And then a year and a half ago, my mom passed, but she was going through it. Like, my dad was sudden. My mom was had cancer, and it was a longer thing that you kind of know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And so, you know, during the pandemic, I wasn't a big fan of being on Zoom all the time, but it afforded me to be with my mom and work from there. And so I was literally making this movie in my mom's living room and while she was, you know, dying. And there was a tremendous amount of insight that I was getting of as she was going. She was very peaceful. Like, she was good. She was happy to go. She felt like she had her husband. She had a good life. And so it was, you know. But she talked about connections a lot, you know, like I always joked about her, like, Mom, you don't need another Burberry jacket or whatever. Like, she's, you know, like, you're too materialistic. But when it came to the end, she was just talking about these connections and what it meant to her. And making this film, you know, hearing her talking about that, that's what this film sort of started becoming more about. It was just about what does it take to make those connections between such opposite things? You know, what does it mean when you're a foreigner and you don't belong, like my dad or my mom, and when they did feel that, and the empathy and the compassion that it takes to even get that type of connection to happen. And Look, I don't know if all of that, you know, was illuminated in some way, but
I think it was.
There was definitely like these feelings that came out of it, and you know, as closer, I can't wait to finish the film. I'm so proud of the work that everyone's done, but like something's going on. Like I got very emotional the other day, and this minefield of emotion is happening more as I finish this thing, and I'm hoping that with the film being finished, maybe there's some other layer of closure that I'm maybe can get, you know, out of this. But I don't know. It's a wild thing.
Well, first off, I'm sure they'd be so proud of you for making this thing. I'm sure they'd love the film. It is absolutely beautiful in that it's so personal. I sometimes think that the more personal, the more universal.
Yeah.
And how personal this story is to you. Yeah. I saw so many stories that I could relate to I could relate to through my friends' stories. Yeah. I think it's such a beautiful, beautiful film and so well
told. Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming in.
No, thank you.
I can't wait to see the rest of it.
Right on.
Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thank you, Tom. I really appreciate it.
Peter Sohn is the director of Pixar's big new summer movie, Elemental, which opens on Friday, June 16th. I have to tell you, I don't have any kids. I was blown away by it, and I recommend it to you whether you have kids or not. And you know what? Bring some tissues. And that's it for this episode of Q. I want to let you know about the other episode that we uploaded today. So it's in your podcast feed. It's a conversation with Andy Jones. So when I was growing up in Newfoundland and Labrador, Andy Jones was so incredibly important as an artist, but also like as a symbol of uncompromising art and beautiful and powerful art. So much so that whenever Andy kind of did anything, we would go see it. Andy is here, and I'm so grateful that he talked to me. He's here to talk about his one-man show called Don't Give Up On Me, Dad, which is about the death by suicide of his son, Louis, and an exploration of the mental health struggles that Louis faced, and to bring those struggles out into the open, and to bring compassion, more compassion, into the world, especially for those suffering from poor mental health. And if you have the time, I would say you should head over and listen to that conversation because it's been sticking with me for a few days now. That's wherever you got this podcast. It's right there. All right, we'll see you soon. Later on.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.